now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
And I'm Tara Fraser. And in a packed show today, we kick off with Gender Stories, a thorough, thought-provoking journey that's an exhibition on Bristol Museum and Art Gallery.
And it's film festival time as we team up with the Iris team. Bowen's in the studio too, so we'll be talking to him about films and all about the festival itself.
All that today,
right here on Shout Out.
I completely missed that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. And Lara was in for the first time a couple of weeks ago.
And she missed it.
She completely missed it. And it was her blooming thing. You know, she was one that started that kind of tradition.
She's out of practice, clearly.
So, and some nice to have you back again. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing? I'm fine and dandy, thank you.
Have you had a nice summer?
Yeah.
I'm sure I haven't. We were trying to figure it out off air, weren't we? Sure I haven't seen you since Pride.
It's got to be over a month.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Not like, that we're keeping track,
no,
but like, you know.
No, taking a register.
Noted.
And someone else has been off having the time of their life too.
Well,
how what's it called again?
Shambhala.
How was it?
Oh, it was amazing. Yeah. If anyone hasn't been, absolutely go. Every year we've sort of made it a tradition now. So each year we're going to go back, all of our same friendship group. But it's just like a mini Glastonbury, so you don't have to deal with like the excessive crowds. But the venues and the music and the vibe is just really, really lovely.
But still needed a week off when you got back to recover.
Unfortunately, yes. Like there's only so much that the human body can take, and it doesn't have much time to recover at a festival. You're just up and going again.
As Tara goes, I was in bed by 8 every night.
I think that's when we started leaving the campsite. To be honest, I do think that on the final night, to give you a perfect sum up, on the final night, a lady came up to us just with a bag. She was holding out a bag, didn't say a single word, and just went, "Do you want a dinosaur?"
What? A dinosaur?
Well, if you're offering, yeah, I suppose. So then she went, "Well, reach your hand in the bag." Reached in, pulled out a dinosaur, and she went, "These are yours now. Go and show them Shambhala." So I named mine Gregor, like the roar of a dinosaur, and then we took them on the Ferris wheel and showed them Shambhala.
Oh.
Yeah, and you know.
And brought it home?
Oh yeah, it's on my mantle.
Oh right,
yes,
okay.
Yes.
I heard it was quite sad. People tidy up after themselves apparently at Shambhala.
Yeah, no, there was not a single thing left.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they took
really
a drone
impressive.
Shot and yeah. Everything
is it an LGBT
gone.
Event or is it just a...
No, I mean, they obviously have a lot of LGBT performers as well. Like, it's very... I can't remember who it was last year, but I went to a tent and obviously it was very... sex positive in this tent. I think there was vulvas on the ceiling, so you know you can kind of imagine the crowd it's drawing in.
Okay, well that painted a picture. Yeah, I wasn't expecting in my head.
It's all like pink and purple, you know, it's a vibe. It's a vibe.
Yeah. So, well, please enjoyed it anyway.
Yeah, so. Really, really good. So, well, how was Paris?
Paris was stunning, to be fair. We were very lucky, actually, because, of course, there's been riots this week.
Well,
since,
Paris,
since we
got back. They love a riot, don't they?
Because their government's kind of collapsed a little bit with the ousting of their Prime Minister last week. So we were lucky we missed that. And I thought, because I don't know if you remember, but the week before that storm kind of, we caught the tail end of it, came across the UK, then went to France, and I thought, oh, it's going to rain all week. Mm. But actually come like halfway through Wednesday, the sun came out, and by Sunday it was 30 degrees.
Wow.
So, you know, really hot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, going up the Eiffel Tower on a sunny day was spectacular, I won't lie. Mm. The best bit, though, was that evening we went back and we took a French picnic with us, you know, like, baguettes French cheese and ham and
delicious.
A couple of bottles of wine, and we sat underneath the Eiffel Tower and waited till dusk when all the lights came on the tower and lit
it
up. Yeah.
I've seen that. Yeah, they do it like on the hour, every hour or something like that.
They do from dusk, yeah. And it only lasts like 5 minutes, and then the midnight one and the 1 a.m. one, which is the very last one, are different.
Oh,
I won't say how. So we did see the midnight one, and I'm like, oh, I was expecting it to do that.
Oh, wow, okay.
You know, but
lovely.
But it was also, you know, it's just romantic being there with my husband.
Yeah.
You know, drinking red wine under the Eiffel Tower, watching it sparkle.
Got serenaded by a French man, maybe.
Well, no, there's usually street sellers walking around trying to sell you stuff. You know? There's often people there, like with a guitar, and they'll be singing and you know, having a picnic. And it's a common thing that we weren't the only ones. There were a good 1,000 or so people there doing the same thing as us.
I did when I was there. They had a guy accordion. Is that what it is? You know, the pull up. Pull aside.
Yes, I know what you mean.
Is that an accordion?
Yes. Piano accordion.
He was stood there, and I was like, "You're creating the absolute perfect French vibe for me right now." whether he wanted to or not, but he was just. That's my impression of an accordion.
Now we're going to move on in a minute and talk to Bristol Museums, but very quickly before we do, we wanted to mention something that happened in Bristol City Council this week, didn't we? I don't know if you saw it, but they had loads of people from the public in, didn't they?
Yeah.
It was one of those where the public can have a chance to have a say about something.
And the gender critical got in.
Yes. Do we want to read out what actually caused the issue? There was a huge great thing. It was the usual kind of rubbish about, you know, about the Supreme Court had done a particular ruling and that, you know, the council weren't doing anything. But they went on to say all kinds of stuff, including, you know, that thanks to the council, there was no space for lesbians anymore, which, to my knowledge, is not true.
But they're blaming the council for the lack of causation of trans people preventing lesbian spaces from existing in Bristol.
Which I don't think is true.
I wouldn't say so. No. I mean, I'm having a lot of space, so I don't know where they're getting it.
Just, thank you.
Yeah.
We're not causing any trouble.
Yeah. No.
But yeah, I mean, they went on to say that they didn't like the fact that they were using terms like chest feeding and stuff like that.
But also, like, there's more things to be upset about, surely.
Well, you'd hope so, you know. And to be fair, the reaction the other way was also quite extreme, with several councillors walking out while that was actually said and then coming back in afterwards. And then they were also... criticised by Labour council leaders, saying it was deeply offensive and transphobic, and the comment should not have been made. So.
That's a bit rich coming from the Labour Party, really.
Well, it is a little bit. Yeah,
there's local parts of it as well. Let's, you know.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Not everyone and everywhere is bad for us.
Anyway, the people who broke this story was actually Bristol Post. So if you have a search on their website for it,
they do have an article link.
You'll see it on there. There's even a video of it. It's quite hard to hear. I did have a look to see if we could get any audio, but you can't really hear.
No,
what was said, sadly.
I have to admit, I avoided the comment section on that particular.
That's usually a good idea with anything online, isn't it? So
that's a very good link.
I did think the Bristol Post said they were going to limit any kind of comments that would be.
They're going to be tackling them. Apparently, they're going to be going back and calling people out for their
comments. I've actually seen an article where they called a whole load of people out for the homophobic and transphobic abuse.
They even pinpoint where they come from, don't they? Yeah, they're not even from Bristol, half of them.
No.
Which is like,
why are you reading the Bristol Post? It's not even your city.
Yeah, we're too cool.
Anyway, Steve is here from Bristol Museum and Art Gallery. Hello everyone, welcome to you.
Hello there.
So do you have things that people comment on at all? Or are you kind of a bit immune from comments online?
When they went on Facebook, it was horrendous. Absolutely horrendous, yeah. And I think it was vicious.
Is that for the thing we're about to talk about?
Yeah. So when they published the event on Bristol Post, the comments were absolutely horrendous.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Well, we ought to start off with a bit of an introduction. Do you want to tell us what you do for Bristol Museum and Art Gallery?
Yeah, of course. So, my name is Stephen Bradley. I'm the Exhibitions and Displays Manager for Bristol Museums. Essentially, what that means is I work to develop all of the temporary exhibitions that you see at the museum.
Sounds very good fun, though.
Not just me, by the way. A lot of other wonderful
people. No, take credit for all of it.
It's entirely me, and I'm incredibly talented.
Now, you come here to talk to us about something quite specific that you've got running at the moment, haven't you?
That's right.
Do you want to introduce what it is? It's been running for a few weeks now, isn't it?
It's been running for quite a few months, actually.
Oh, right.
So the exhibition it's an exhibition for a start. It's an exhibition called Gender Stories. And it's an exhibition that has been running since the 31st of May, and it closes on the 12th of October, so you do still have time to come and see it. But it's an exhibition that has been developed with Bristol Museums, but also with Brighton and Hove Museums and National Museums Liverpool as well. So it's a real kind of cross-the-country collaborative effort between cultural organisations.
Oh, nice.
And essentially, the exhibition includes artworks, it includes objects from the museum's collections, anything from social history to natural sciences, and we use those collections to explore the very broad, very sprawling theme and concept of gender identity. But within that, what we do is we also platform human voices, lived experience, and we've consulted a lot of different communities to be able to do that. So it's a really rich interdisciplinary but also multi-sensory exploration of the past, present and potential future of gender identity.
Yeah, and I saw some of those are on the website, aren't they? The sound bites.
Yes, some of them are.
So if you can't make it to the museum, you can still go to the website and actually access?
That's correct as well. And also within the exhibition, there's the opportunity to be able to add your own stories. So one of the things we very much acknowledge within the show is because it's so vast and because it's so intersectional in nature as well, we can only kind of show and tell so much. So we have the opportunity for people to contribute their own stories while they're in the exhibition and for those to go online in an exhibition online that accompanies it. So there's an ever-growing kind of extension to the exhibition that spreads beyond the confines of the museum's walls. And hopefully that will also tour to Brighton and Liverpool. So the other thing to mention is, yes, it closes for us on the 12th of October, but it will be opening in Brighton from the 31st of January onwards. And then later next year, it will be going to National Museums Liverpool at the Walker Art Gallery as well.
Oh, wow. Nice.
I was going to ask that if it was touring. Is it perhaps going to London at all?
It is not, actually.
Okay.
Actually, one of the interesting things about it, it's part of an initiative to be able to empower and encourage regional museums to generate their own touring projects outside of the, I suppose, the control of London, which is often quite saturated.
Yeah. I mean, they've got enough in London.
They have too much.
Yeah, people don't have enough time. Exactly.
But it originated here in Bristol. It's also the cool thing, you know.
It's a partnership, but yes, we have done a lot of the kind of curatorial work on it. It's entirely me. It's all me. Me and me alone. I do have to say that my shout out to my colleague Helen McConnell Simpson, who's the social history curator. I can't get away without acknowledging Helen. So, but it was all me still.
Yeah.
And you said there's a Bristol bent to what's going on in the what's the thing at the moment.
Yeah.
And it'll change slightly for Brighton and Liverpool as well?
Yep, that's entirely right. I mean, there's quite a large chunk of collections from Bristol. A lot of those explore kind of Bristol stories and Bristol narratives. And then when it goes to the other sites, they may include other kind of collections and items that are relevant to their city and to their locations. But there's going to be a core contingent of objects from all three cities' collections that will go to each of the venues as well.
So what kind of things would I see if I come along?
Oh, God. You would see all sorts. So we have kind of sculptures. We have paintings that explore things like some of the original stereotypes of kind of where gender identity might come from. Some things that are kind of deeper history, looking into kind of Egyptology and to kind of ancient Rome, to see kind of various kind of representations of non-gender conforming identities. There are artistic representations of gender non-conforming identities as well. So we have works by Mr. Samo, who is a trans man and street artist, who's done a huge and impressive mural and intervention in the front hall of the museum. It's a riot of pinks and yellows and colour, and the overarching message to that is you are loved, which is universal but also particularly pertinent to the queer community. And that explores their lived experience of transitioning, of top surgery, and kind of, yeah, shed some light on their own personal identities. There's another great one by a pivotal artist called Della Grace Volcano. They've spent the past 50 years documenting queer culture in various different forms. In this instance, it's through photography, but they're identifying and documenting their own intersex identity, which again includes like a really interesting and often underrepresented narrative to kind of gender identity within this conversation. So the exhibition really covers a whole host of things, including what gender is, how it overlaps with sex and sexuality, how actually it's distinct and separate from it at the same time, but actually it's a rich and beautiful mess which is hard to separate and hard to extract.
So there's a lot of historical stuff in there.
There's
too,
historical
because,
stuff.
I mean, it's like the whole idea that it's a very binary thing is actually quite a modern thing from what we know, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, I mean, one of the things that we look at is gender across time and place. So what our understanding of gender is now is not what the understanding of gender has always been. And what our understanding of gender is as a Western society is not necessarily what it has been internationally. And, you know, the exhibition touches upon difficult issues like colonialism, patriarchy, capitalism, and how some of those quite overarching forces have helped shape and change how we look at the stereotypes of gender today and how we understand gender today. But actually, when you drill into it, it's a really rich and diverse tapestry. And these differences and these complexities, they've always been there. They're not new.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, is it... I'm pretty sure it's not, but I can hear... So should we say more right-leaning people going, oh, you're just going to shove it in my face? I'm assuming it's not that type of an exhibition, is it?
No, I mean, the premise of the exhibition is that everybody has some connection with gender or gender identity, whether that's it, whether it's something that's really intrinsic to them, something that's really important, whether it's something they don't think about at all, but, you know, the influences and the currents are around them, or actually whether it's something that they actively reject for whatever reasons or motivations that they may have. So the way we explore this in the exhibition is through various different perspectives. It's not just from an LGBTQIA plus perspective, although we have consulted with a lot of communities in Bristol around that, but we've also worked with cishet kind of male groups, women's groups, global majority ethnicity groups, and also just a lot of intersectionality within all of our consultation as well. So there's a lot of voices and perspectives represented in there that aren't about the queer community as well. And also that look at what a lot of people might consider as, I'm doing air quotes here, by the way, but normativity or what normal, essentially.
Cool. I mean, it's one of those things people don't think about. You walk around that and they don't realize the amount of research that goes into the behind the scenes to make sure it's actually something quite, you know, pertinent to what the actual exhibition is. That sounds like it takes quite a long time to do.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say for something like this as well, for any exhibition, you have the kind of thematic and academic research, looking into the histories of objects, the accuracy, the stories that are there. But for something like this, you can't deliver it without consultation. You can't deliver that without talking to people with relevant experiences. That takes time. It doesn't take time just to collate it. It takes time to build trust with people. Yeah. And as a museum, as an organization that historically is often perhaps erased some of those identities and some of those perspectives, that's not always an easy thing to expect people to do. It requires vulnerability, it requires trust, and obviously the exhibition deals with a lot of joy. A lot of it is about celebration, but within that, what we're also looking at things that are quite challenging. They're not things that we want to shy away from, and with that, that's difficult for people to talk about and brave for them to express within a public context. So yes, there's lots of different types of research that go into that, and possibly sometimes you may not anticipate on visiting.
Cool. Well, it's open at the moment, isn't it?
That's right.
When's it finishing?
12th of October.
So you've got about a month.
That's right.
Is it free?
It is pay what you can. So what we're saying is we recommend a £6 payment to enter the exhibition. Having said that, we absolutely recognise that we don't want to put barriers in the way of people accessing something that's so important. So you can pay what you can. You can pay as little or as much as you want. That can be nothing. But equally, if people feel like they want to support the exhibition, then they're able to.
I just have one question. I've been to the exhibition. I thought it was brilliant. But right at the end, there's the lovely little piece where you can tie a ribbon.
Yes.
for various different options. And forgive me, I've forgotten what those are. But what's been the feedback from that ribbon tying? Peace.
So this is a challenge for me because I have to remember what those provocations are now too. So I think one of them is I've changed my mind about something. One of them is I've heard a new perspective today. One of them is that I think we have more in common than the media would have us believe. And the other is that I'm hopeful about the future of gender. And I would say that the ones that have the overwhelming riot of multicolored ribbons are the ones that are hope for the future of gender, and that we have more in common than we think the media would have us believe. And the nice thing about the ribbons is it parallels this idea of ribbons of support, which are quite prevalent within causes, especially within the LGBTQI plus community. But this idea of tying a ribbon to make a wish for the future. And the exhibition ends on what is the future of gender? And the way we pitch that is it's about radical solidarity. It's finding community. And sometimes it's finding community through difference. We might all have our small pockets of difference, but actually if we unite together to maybe tackle some of these overarching forces of capitalism, of patriarchy, of colonialism, then we can focus on what's really important and we can make real and positive change and support one another.
That's lovely. I took a blue ribbon and a pink ribbon, tied them together.
Excellent.
And then tied them around the I Have Hope for the Future. So.
Well, thank you.
If people want to find out more, how do they get a look and see about coming down to see it? Are you online?
Yes, we are. I mean, if you look for Bristol Museums on any of our socials, you can also just search for that on Google and we will come up pretty quickly. And then on there, you can find the listing for the exhibition. So have a look on there. But equally, you can just come down, you can book online, but you can just walk up on the day and book as well. So.
Cool, brilliant. Well, thank you so much for coming and talking to us about
it.
It's brilliant to get a behind-the-scenes kind of glimpse as well, because you don't get that when you're walking around. It's nice to hear how much effort goes to behind the scenes for this.
As long as I haven't bored you.
not at all. So stay with us. You're listening to Shout Out. We'll be back in a minute.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
Now, I'm hoping there's a certain Terry there. Are you there, Terry? Are you around, Terry? Hello? Oh, he's disappeared. Okay, well, we could have a talk and see. Hello, are you there? Terry?
Hello?
Hello, can you hear us? Terry?
Hello, yes, I'm here, Andy.
Can you hear me at all? Okay, I'll tell you what we'll do. I don't know if Terry can hear us or not. Can you hear us,
There's
Terry?
There's a 20-second lag on clean feed.
Oh, right, okay. You are live on air, I hasten to add, mate. we were hoping we could get some news off you.
So I can hear.
I tell you what, we'll have a song, we'll get Terry sorted and we'll come back.
The Shout Out Podcast.
That's Boombayah. I didn't realise you were a fan.
What, a Blackpink?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I do like their song Jump. I don't know if you guys have heard that. It's almost got a German techno-inspired-esque to it.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
Not
I like
so much
this. This is actually, I'm just saying off air, this is from Wednesday.
Yes.
Which is currently on Netflix. End
Jenna
of season
Ortega.
One.
Yes. A star.
Brilliant actress.
Yeah.
And it's lovely seeing Joanna Lumley in it.
I saw
playing
yes.
the part of the grandma.
Did you see what she said about gay actors?
I didn't.
And straight actors, sorry. She came out and said that a world in which that straight actors can't play gay characters is a boring world. And I was like, interesting take, Joanna Lumley.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone should be able to play everything. Personally.
Yeah, I mean, if you're an actor, the whole point is you're not being yourself,
yeah,
right?
Well, yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. But obviously,
do it every week here.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I'm hoping we got Terry sorted now. Are you there, mate?
And no. Well, all listeners, well, we're just figuring out if anyone has any songs that they would like
Hello,
us
Andy.
To play.
Oh, okay. I don't know why there's such a delay.
Mm.
But I'm going to say, I'm going to kick the news jingle off now and we'll hope, okay?
This is Shout Out News. Welcome along. AllOut.org, the international campaign for LGBTQIA plus solidarity, reports on September the 17th, Alberto, a 40-year-old gay man living with HIV and cancer, could be sent to prison in Italy. For him, that decision would be a death sentence. Obrito's case does not involve violence against anyone. He was convicted of a petty property crime, yet he now risks being locked away in conditions that medical experts have already declared incompatible with detention and carrying a, quote, concrete risk to his life. Alberto's survival depends on highly specialised life-saving treatment at the Policinio of Milan, in Italy's overcrowded prisons with scarce medical staff and endless delays. Access to such complex therapies is practically impossible, and because Alberto is gay, he can also face homophobic abuse and isolation inside the prison system. All Out say this isn't about asking for clemency, it's about demanding the constitutional right to health and the simple demand that no one should be condemned to die behind bars because of illness. All Out have started a petition aimed at the Italian authorities. To sign, visit alloutorg. The Peter Tatchell Foundation quotes Pink News, which is reporting on Kharkiv Pride taking place in the city and regional provincial capital of northeast Ukraine, just 18 miles from the border with Russia. Activists are understandably concerned about the possibility of the territory being overrun by or ceded to the Russian Federation, with its armoury of homophobic and transphobic policies which have stifled human rights there. But despite the ongoing war, the destruction and the uncertainty, Pride persists. Despite Kharkiv remaining firmly in Ukrainian control, the city has been continuously bombarded with shelling, with residents attempting to live their day-to-day lives amongst air sirens, blackouts and ruins. On the 30th and 31st of August, the Kharkiv Pride organisation hosted a Pride Fest, followed by a commemoration of fallen LGBTQIA+ military personnel on the 5th of September, and concluded with an auto pride on the 6th, which saw a convoy of cars bedecked in rainbows travel through the city. The Bristol Post, a regional West Country newspaper, which recently said that it would start to name and shame homophobic and racist trolls that are known to populate its comments threads, reports that gender disputes continue in the city. During a debate in the city's council chambers, several Green councillors walked out of the hall whilst anti-trans members of the public were speaking and making unsubstantiated claims about lesbian women being harassed by trans women. As the Green Party LGBTQIA+ group noted, this attempt by the right wing to divide the queer movement along trans lines has no evidence in reality. The overwhelming majority of lesbian women have a high opinion of trans women, as evidenced in the popular protest slogan, "Keep the L with the T." The Lord Mayor of Bristol remarked that it was important that both sides were heard in the debate, as long as no one crossed the line into hate speech. Paul Scott Williams, the CEO of Melbourne's LGBT plus radio station, community radio station Joy FM, blogs about the importance of LGBTQIA plus people getting involved in mental health campaigns. Paul says, "Are You Okay Day, which is not specifically levelled at our community, is nonetheless important as a reminder to be mindful of mental health and well-being, to be a caring voice and a kind listener. However, in our workplaces and homes, in our lives, isn't this something that should be at the core of our everyday behaviour and mindset? Mental health and emotional health is not something that exists within the confines of a single day in the calendar. Today there are laws, practices and collegial expectations that support and advocate for caring for friends and colleagues on a daily basis. The dark times when being seen as emotionally vulnerable in the workplace was viewed as weakness are over and they belong in the past." Joy FM is available in Melbourne on 94.9 FM and globally on the internet. And finally, in sports news, the centre-left commentator David Goldblatt is appearing as guest of local community bookstore Gloucester Road Books on Thursday the 2nd of October at the Boston Tea Party Cafe at 293 Gloucester Road. David will be discussing his new book Injury Time, Football in a State of Emergency. From grassroots clubs battling for survival to the rise and fall of Russian oligarchs, Marcus Rashford's anti-hunger campaigns and the uproar surrounding Gary Lineker's tweets, Injury Time dives into a football's central role in public debate and consciousness. The game, Goldblatt contends, is the ultimate social bellwether, particularly in an age of multiple crises such as Brexit, COVID, climate catastrophes, economic and political upheaval. David has written for numerous publications, including The Guardian, Observer, The Times Literary Supplement, The FT, The New Statesman, The New Left Review and Prospect. He taught sociology of sport at Bristol University and Pitzer College in Los Angeles. To learn more about this event, visit GloucesterRoadBooks.com. Well, be sure to connect with LGBTQIA+ News this week. Why not listen in to more from your local community radio services? Or pick up papers and magazines from independent bookstores and cafes. And we will be back with you next week, same place, same time. For Shoutout News, this has been Terry Starr.
Shoutout News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
For more information about Shoutout Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shoutout.
LGBT radio for you.
There we go, we got there. We managed to get some news. Thank you, Terry, for that. I'm going to carry straight on. Normally go into a song here, but I know that we're going to have so much to talk about in this next feature. It's well worth introducing the man himself. We've had him on the show before, but it was remote. It's the first time we've actually had you live, isn't it? I'm very pleased to say a very warm welcome to Berwyn from the Irish Film Festival and Prize. Hello.
Nice to be here.
Yes, in person. It's not on a Zoom. It's great.
Well, I'm here thanks to the industrial action in London for transport for London.
Yeah.
We were supposed to have a launch in the big city, and it was called off a few weeks ago. The right call, because probably nobody would have bothered turning up.
No one could get there.
Nobody could get there. Yeah. So I'm delighted.
Can we be very selfish and say we're a little bit proud because we're getting to kind of do the launch for you on air, which is kind of quite fun.
Yeah, and literally at we should have announced, shared the programme, and we're doing it here. So thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. It's lovely to have you on. It's nice to be involved in something so huge as well. Now, can we start with a little bit about what the Irish Festival is and the prize, etc.? Because I'm sure the listeners who'll be going, I've not heard of that.
Yeah, and we are the worst, best-kept secret. But it has grown. It has developed. Next year, it's our 20th anniversary. Some things haven't changed, so our aim, very simply at the beginning, was our desire to see more LG. Well, when we started, it was lesbian and gay. That's how long ago it was. And then it became lesbian, gay, bisexual. Then it became lesbian, gay, trans, queer. And we now have the plus. I am minded that, you know, one morning there will be another letter, because that's the way it's going at the moment, to make sure, obviously, that everybody's represented. But no, our aim was really simple, was to get a bigger audience to see our stories. And that hasn't changed, really. So, you know, we're very proud, for example, some really weird stats and figures. 30% of our audience who come to the festival in Cardiff each October identify as straight. And that was something that we've worked hard in making sure that what we're doing really is celebrating, very pompously we're calling it, excellence in storytelling. So, you know, I'm always asked, you know, if I had to sort of split hairs, two sides of the same coin or whatever, we are, IRIS as an organisation is first and foremost a film and media organisation. But we've decided to focus on LGBTQ plus stories. Mm. And that's a really important one for the filmmakers who turn up to IRIS, because they're coming to a film festival. So we're not sort of overtly political. We are completely political. The fact that we exist is political. But we're not a campaigning organisation. That's somebody else's job. What we do is share stories. And then by sharing the stories, trust me, we could be more successful than some campaigning organisations, because you allow people to see things that they probably wouldn't see.
And it's not a small thing either, is it? Because Channel 4 even are involved and air all the films and the like too, don't they?
Yeah, well, and again, something else that hasn't changed. 20-odd years ago, almost every single town had a film festival. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, it's sharing films, it's sharing stories on the big screen. But today, we're consuming content in the way that we want to consume it. So you don't have to go to a film festival, let's be honest. And if you want to see queer stories, there's an awful lot available on all the various platforms.
Yeah.
You know, Netflix, whatever it is. And I'm constantly reminded by, I call them lazy journalists. They're not really, they're just having to do more work than they used to. But I'm always, you know, reminded, come on, you guys, you're in every soap opera. Name your soap opera, Berwyn, that doesn't have an LGBTQ plus character. And correct, yeah, well done. There are many of them. But what we talk about at Iris is the mundane beautiful, the mundane ordinariness that the mainstream, I won't say deliberately, because I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but they ignore. We don't see, you know, we're still in a situation where if you do have a lesbian character, chances are she's going to be killed off by the second reel.
Yeah. Or you could have it that if there is a movie, they'll probably be under candlelight, you know, probably won't be in the modern age. Or,
so we have been the baddies in quite a lot of films, including James Bond.
So the mundane ordinariness, obviously I catch myself when I say that and reminding people, but there's nothing mundane and ordinary about the films we show at Iris, which is true. At the beginning, there were lots of film festivals, so the one thing we wanted to do, which really was probably the thing that's allowed Iris to grow, was to offer a prize. You know, it's one thing to share content, which we do, and then the other thing we do is we share content with the filmmakers, because that's the one thing that Channel 4 can't do, Netflix can't do it. You know, you come to our festival for the 7 days, and the chances are that every single screen will have a filmmaker in the screening, and there'll be a Q&A, so the whole thing is more. But what we wanted to do was offer a prize, so that we were not only just sharing stories, but that we were also investing in the new story. So we created something called the Iris Prize. In a couple of weeks' time, somebody will win the 19th Iris Prize. So it's now £40,000 cash.
Gosh. Wow. Where did it start out of interest? Do you remember?
Well, we said it was 20,000. It was smoke and mirrors, to be honest with you. I just didn't go on holiday, and we were using this. But no, it was a mixture of facilities and services to the value of £20,000.
Whereas now it's actually...
It is 40 grand cash, and it's just gone up by 10,000, because last year we presented 30. And it's called inflation. Don't quite understand how it works. But you know what's going to happen? I know within a couple of years they'll be saying that 40,000 isn't enough. And, you know, but I mean,
it's not cheap making a film. I mean, if you look at the big Hollywood ones, they're millions, aren't they? So to do something, and I've seen some of the films over the years, they look as good as professional. And I'm sure someone will say, hang on a sec, they are professional.
They are professional, you know.
But then I'm sure they're not doing it on a multi-million pound budget. No, they don't have that kind of money. But so they managed to pull it off.
It's that artistic ability to project that, surely.
So, yeah, is the £40,000 to go back into another film?
Well, yeah, the winner has to come back to the UK. Strangely, most of them have come back to Cardiff, to Wales. And...
got good studios there, to be fair.
Well, yeah, Bad Wolf, BBC, Casualty. Sorry, it left.
But they
have to make a film. So at the moment, out of the 19, we will have a 19th winner. We've completed. We've actually made 13 films, and the 13th film, Never, 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 will premiere on our opening night in October.
Yep. It was directed by John Sheedy, who was the 2022 Iris Prize winner, correct me if I'm
wrong. But talk about the money thing you said, which is interesting, you know, the 40,000 and whatnot. We do have a feature film from Lloyd and Neil, who are based in Manchester. It's a feature film called Departures, and that did not cost them a lot of money. They made the film at weekends over, I think it was 9 months to a year, and it was premiered earlier this year. It got to London, it got to Dublin, etc. Where she's showing it in October. And that is an example of, if you know what you're doing and you can pull in favours, you can make something, you know, and it's very difficult to watch the film and actually realise how little it costs. Is that sustainable? Obviously not. Yeah. So, you know, you are constantly looking for money. And that's what filmmakers want, and that's why they love Iris, because
they've got a chance.
There is a chance for somebody to win, yeah.
Well, I would love to be able to do trailers of all of them. And we did bring a few trailers with us. Probably got time to talk about a couple of them. Shall we have a listen to Tomorrow's Never Late?
Yes, please. One of my favourites. It's Tomorrow's Too Late, and it's a lovely film. It's a trans film, which, you know, an awful lot of filmmakers at the moment want to tell a trans story. So therefore, you know, you've got to find something different, because it doesn't matter whether it's a trans story or a gay story or a lesbian story. It's got to be told well.
Mm.
And this film is a breath of fresh air. It deals with transitioning. But it deals with it from the point of view of somebody who has an amazing voice, who's a bit of a pop star, and the transition process. What's going to happen to the voice?
Yeah.
What's going to happen to this voice? And there were fans who adored this female voice, and you know he was transitioning into a boy. What happens? Watch the documentary. It's fascinating. And some of the listeners, if you go onto YouTube and all that stuff, I think it's up there. There's a duet with the voice today and the voice three or four years ago. It is... I wasn't sure who'd put it together, but he's put it together. So he owns the rights to the whole thing. And it's magical, you know, because we're told that we're a bit scared to talk about some subject matters. So obviously, don't dead name people, etc., etc. But here, you're faced with a creation, a piece of music, where there are two voices from the same person at different times in their life.
Taking ownership.
Should we have a listen to the trailer?
Play it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Hi, guys. I'm Lox Holloway. Going roller coaster crazy.
Just so taken by her vocal. I just love that kind of raspy tone that she has. I'd rather lose
myself. A few people have asked me, if your voice means so much to you and singing means this much to you, then why?
To our youngest sister, Lottie. Youngest brother.
Hi, I'm Dylan Holloway, and this is my voice, one day on testosterone. And this is my voice, 1 week on T. And this is my voice, 3 weeks on T. This is my voice, 1 month on testosterone.
Testosterone has multiple effects. We will be taking you through male puberty at an accelerated fashion. But it's the voice deepening which, as a singer, you need to be aware of.
In case we lose it all, my love, remember that I did it all for us to live the life we dreamed of.
I've always felt like music and my voice and the ability to perform is my only redeeming feature.
Hard it was before the world could see now.
Music is the only thing that's saved my life from going under.
The child within my heart was only calling out for love.
When you break it down into music and my day-to-day life, this is so important to me.
And that's just the trailer.
I mean, already very moving.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Very, very moving. Yes.
And what's important about Iris is, you know, just I think it's a really good, thank you for choosing that one. It's a very good example of what the festival is about. You get to see the film, you get to meet him, you get to meet the producers coming all the way from LA, you get to meet the directors coming all the way from Belfast. They'll do a Q&A after the screening, and then in the bar. Oh, God, is this supposed to be a secret? Anyway, if it isn't a secret, he's going to be performing an acoustic set of about five songs in the festival bar afterwards. Secret. So that is just one little slither. That's one of the... Oh, I'm going to sound like a marketing person, but it's one of the 13 feature films we've got.
That's funny,
and it went down really well at various documentary festivals, and... we've got it. We're really pleased. We worked hard to get it.
Yeah.
Because there's all, you know, basically everybody wants to share the better films.
Yes. Mm.
And you get offered not necessarily the films you want to screen.
So I know our number one, which I'll come to in a minute, but before we do that, tell me about Screams from the Tower.
I'm going to be celebrating my 59th birthday next week. And I've realised that I am not the kind of person who would enjoy this film. It's targeted at the next generation. It's fun. It's sexy. It's stupid. And I think it will make people laugh, the younger generation laugh. It's
what's the basic premise?
It's a school and it's a radio station. And, yeah, I haven't chosen that because I'm here. But we've got the director coming over who's also an actor. He's coming. He's not in LA. Where is he? Oh, he's somewhere in America. Anyway.
That's a big place, America.
Yeah. But he's coming over. He's going to be with us for the week. And again, that's part of what we're doing is, you know, this film doesn't have a UK distributor. Wow. So the chances are, you know, this is a film that... you know, you won't get a chance to see unless Netflix buys it eventually.
That was something I was going to ask. Is there any opportunity to watch these films online for people who can't actually make it to the festival?
Thank you very much for asking that question, because all of the short films are available online. So when we open, so when we see programme, whatever it is, within an hour, bing bang, it appears on our catch-up service. So if you go to irisprize.org, it's all there, and it's there until the 9th or something of November. So there's a chance to watch all the shorts. So that's 9 programmes of international shorts, 3 programmes of British shorts, and there's other bits and bobs available online, which is not available in the festival. So yes is the answer. Fantastic. But not the feature films. You've got to come to Cardiff to the festival. But some of the films, like our closing night film, Pillion, that will be available in cinemas across the UK in November. So there are some films which we've called previews.
Fantastic. Thanks.
Well, would you like to hear the trailer for Screams from the Tower?
Yes.
Welcome to Screams from the Tower with Julian Rosdahl and Carrie Geller. I'm Julian Rosdahl.
And I'm Carrie Geller.
Prepare ye the way of the Lord and... welcome to the show.
Summer is over, and that means we're back, kids.
It's your senior year.
Welcome to WNFH.
We're in the house?
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, I'm so in the house. That's what the kids say. They say in the house.
They don't.
Julian, I really love your show. Super funny. So funny.
Not a lot.
We have pizzazz coming out of
just
our pool.
Oozing from all our little holes.
Get out!
I can't do the radio show.
I can't keep up.
The rest of the seniors are preparing to go to college, but with your grades, your attendance, I'm afraid that if you stay on this path, you might not graduate.
I feel a lot of pressure
to be normal.
You know, I make this show in my bedroom, where it's safe.
You're deserting me!
And when it's time to actually step out of it, I'm terrified.
I think you call your show Screams from the Tower, because that's what it feels like in your head.
God, in all of our heads, especially in high school.
Hi. No. You want a shit wig?
I want to see it again now. I mean, listen to that trailer.
So now we're running out of show, and I could talk about these all days. No, I don't know if you're supposed to have favourites, are you? But I know this is one of your favourites, isn't it? Dreamers.
Oh, yeah. It's a film that deals with a difficult situation about a
very difficult situation, yeah.
And it's immigration, legally, illegally, vulnerable people needed to be safe. Who, where, what, why? Sometimes, all I'll say is, sometimes you've got to go either to the cinema or watch something on telly, and you know it's going to be hard work. But I think you have a responsibility and a duty as a human being to see some stuff, because you can imagine all kinds of scenarios, but when you see a film presented in front of you and you realise that some of the stories It's based on a true story as well, and it's a big film. We didn't think we'd get it, to be honest with you, because it's screening at the London Film Festival, you know, the mummy and daddy and whatever of the film festival world in Europe. But you will get to see it with the director in attendance for the Q&A on our closing weekend on the Saturday. And I'm not going to pretend it's the kind of film where you will... you'll probably need a drink if you want a drink, or a coffee. Or better still, have a pizza and a piece of cheesecake. You know, you'll need something to help you.
Some comfort.
You'll need some comfort, yeah. But it's
well, the trailer doesn't give that much away. So have a listen to this and tell me what you think.
When we are both out, I will take you on a proper date.
I see how you look at each other. I think it's beautiful.
You've applied for asylum. Why can't you be gay in Nigeria?
It's illegal. Don't give up. What will our home be like?
We will make it ours.
That's going to be a bit of a hard one, that one, to watch. But yes. Yeah. Anyway, we didn't pick those for any particular reason. We just wanted to get some clips in the show to give you an idea of some of the content that's coming in the film festival. Bowen, when's the festival happening? How do people find out more about it? Can you get tickets, etc.?
Yeah, we launched the festival programme today. If you're a member, you can buy tickets today. If you're not a member, public box office opens on the 18th. Is that a week today? 18th of September?
Yep.
Yeah. Something like that. Yep. And then the festival itself is the open, well, the 7-day festival will be open on Monday, the 13th of October. And we will be shattered but very happy on Sunday, the 19th of October.
Cool. And I'm very pleased to say shout outs are going to be there as well.
So I hope so. We've got your
wandering around.
Yeah. And we've got your passes ready and access all areas. No, it's interesting. There are so many people who are looking forward to meeting you. Because one thing filmmakers like more than I do, they like to talk.
But yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's going to be a big success. 19 years, and of course, we're going to be there with you next year as well for the big 20th, which is going to be absolutely phenomenal. So do check them out. If I'm correct, tell me if I'm getting this wrong. Irisprice.org, is that the website
that you're after? Irisprice.org, everything's there. And as I said, you don't have to travel to Cardiff. You don't need a passport or anything.
Cardiff's a nice place.
It's wonderful.
As is Bristol. Yeah. Yes. I like Bristol. I come here often. So I'm just hoping that people come and see us.
Yeah, of course.
There's no tolls anymore. No, it's amazing. No.
45, 50 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, no, do come along, and we'll make sure we put all the links up on our website too. So if you want to find out more about it, or you didn't catch the link, it will be up with the podcast later. Thanks so much for that, Berwin. I'm sure we'll have more in the coming weeks, but that is it for this week. Keep up to date, listen, find out all about Shoutout online.
Go to shoutoutradio.lgbt, and don't forget, in contact if you'd like to get involved with the show.
Next week it's Young Hearts. But from myself, from the lovely Berwin, from Arby, from Terry, from Darren, and the lovely, you can do yourself,
Tara.
Tara, there you go.
There we go.
Say bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.